Nolkalikai Falls is the tallest single-drop waterfall in India, at around 1,100 feet, or 340 meters tall. Legend has it that a local woman named Likai resided in a nearby village and had to remarry after her husband died. She was left with her infant baby and no financial means to support her, so she would be gone much of the day earning an income to survive. It isn't entirely clear to me why, but what happens next is her new husband kills and cooks her infant while Likai is away, and when she returns home from work, tired and hungry, she finds nobody home except this prepared meal, and she proceeds to eat it. She soon realized what had happened in her absence and went mad with anger and grief and just started running, eventually right off the edge of the plateau. This waterfall where she jumped from was named Nolkalikai Falls after her. This waterfall is located near Cherrapunji, one of the wettest places on Earth. India has many waterfalls and many myths, legends, and ancient stories which sometimes sound very plausible and at other times resemble B-quality science fiction movies. For example, Hanuman in Hindu mythology was the name of a hybrid simian commander of a monkey army. His exploits are narrated in the great Hindu Sanskrit poem, the Ramayana, which means Rama's journey, and Hanuman is worshipped as a subsidiary figure in temples dedicated to Rama or directly in shrines dedicated to the ape-like deity himself. In the Hindu epic Ramayana, Nala is the Vanara, or monkey, who is credited as the engineer of the Rama Setu, a bridge across the ocean between India and Lanka, identified with modern-day Sri Lanka, so forces of the god Rama could pass over into Lanka. The wife of Rama, in the story, was kidnapped by the demon king of Lanka, whose name is Ravana, and Rama, aided by an army of monkeys, reached the end of the land and wanted to cross over the water into Lanka. So Rama starts shooting various weapons at the sea, which then starts drying up, and amongst his monkey army, a monkey hybrid named Nala then led the construction of a bridge across the remaining water of the ocean into Lanka, collecting logs of wood and giant boulders and stones and having the monkeys cast them into the sea. So they completed the 80-mile or about 130-kilometer bridge in just 5 days. And Rama and his army passed over it, reached Lanka, where they prepared to fight Ravana. So, Nala, the monkey hybrid, is said to have been born when Vishwakarma, who is a human-like or human-looking deity from a godlike race, embraces Nala's simian mother and has an ejaculation. Incidentally, simian means ape-like or monkey-like. So while some commentaries say that the other monkey slaves merely collected the building material and the hybridized Nala was the one who actually constructed the bridge, other scholars interpret that the monkeys build the bridge themselves, performing the actual labor under his direction and supervision. In either case, Nala is credited as the architect of the bridge, and the one with the know-how. From our modern perspective, some of these epics really do involve outrageous scenarios, stories that seem almost silly at times, with artistic depictions that are either cartoon-like and used in children's entertainment, or stone sculptures that can be mistaken for ancient pornographic fantasy rather than a poem that some great minds have considered to have a solid basis in reality. But what evidence is there to convince anyone that these things, even in part, actually happened, even if the story is exaggerated over time? In our modern age of science and empirical evidence, let's focus our attention on searching for some archaeological finds, if there are any, from the time and place of these prehistoric fables.
No major archaeological relics of the period of Rama have been found on ground so far. This is because Rama is said to have lived thousands of years ago. In a continuous civilization, generations come and go, and as they keep building and rebuilding their cities, they destroy or alter evidences of the previous generation. Hence, we don't find, and it's not easy to find, evidences in Ayodhya or other parts of the land today.
The only place to look for archaeological evidences of Rama is the Rama Setu, which today could be submerged in the sea. Ramayana and Mahabharata, the traditional historical texts of India. The text gives the process of bridge construction in great and specific detail. This level of detailing of bridge construction urges us to examine the details. This construction detailing can be studied from the aspects of survey, planning, and civil engineering involved. Rama and his team seem to have surveyed this land for a possible bridge construction site. Under the command of Nala, the Vanara army go about building this bridge on the sea ridge. Let us examine the civil engineering techniques employed in this bridge construction. The first is the foundation details. The text very clearly states that wood from a variety of trees, the names of which are mentioned here, were first piled on the sea ridge to give a pile foundation or wood cushion effect. It was on top of this the large and small stones were piled on. This animation here shows us clearly the seabed from which the sea ridge rises as an outcrop, which is natural and undulating. On top of this we have the trees, then the stones, large and small, and finally we have the flat finished level. Even to this day, the remnants of the bridge have this flat finished level. Due to the passage of time of many millennia, sand has accumulated over the structure, and what we are able to see now is mainly sandbars and shoals. If we carefully shovel away the accumulated sand, we are certain to see the layers of the bridge construction. In the bottom layer, the wood used by the Vanara for the foundation would certainly be there. Obviously, over the last so many thousand years, the wood would have solidified and become carbonaceous material and would probably now be botanical grains. The text then speaks of the Vanara holding ropes on both sides of the bridge being constructed and the wood and the stones being piled between them. The text clearly mentions that the Vanara held ropes for many yojana to build the bridge in proper linear alignment. From this description, it is clear that it was not just random throwing of stones, but a planned effort which took into consideration the concept of linear alignment, which is even today evident from the aerial photograph of the bridge. The distances they covered each day is also mentioned in the text. In the text, it's explicitly mentioned that the total length of the bridge was 100 yojana in length and 10 yojana in width. This is a 10:1 ratio. Today, at actual site conditions, the Rama Setu or Adams Bridge measures to 35 kilometers in length by 3.5 kilometers in width. This is also a 10:1 ratio. After the victorious battle with Ravana, while returning with Sita to Ayodhya in the Pushpak Vimana, they fly over this bridge. Rama then points this bridge to Sita and states as to how difficult it was for them to construct and how it was only Nala, the engineer par excellence, who could execute it, and Rama calls it Nala Setu. When did this Nala Setu come to be called Adam's Bridge? The bridge was originally called Nala Setu, as we have seen. Later the people, out of their admiration and veneration for Rama, started calling it Rama Setu, and later it also got the name Setu Bandha, that which joins two lands. This has been a walking bridge for many millennia. During the course of its early usage, one of the early Islamic religious leaders of Sri Lanka walked over this bridge and reached Lanka to do penance there. Since he was the early Islamic man, he was called Adam by the Sri Lankan Muslims. When the Europeans came to this part of the world, they could easily correlate to the name Adam, and they started calling it Adam's Bridge in their records, and the name stayed. In the last few decades, man-made satellites have been regularly orbiting the Earth and photographing various parts of the Earth. One such area they have photographed is the southern part of India. In this set of photographs, the bridge is also visible. It can be distinctly seen as a shallow underwater causeway connecting the two lands. These photographs do suggestively indicate it to be man-made due to its unique curvature. The opinion of many is that this could be the man-made bridge as detailed in the Ramayana text.
Over the last few minutes, we have seen with a certain clarity and a detailed understanding how this bridge is a civil engineering marvel as explained in the text. A man-made accretion over a natural seepage.
Today, on an average, this causeway is about 2 meters below water. When this bridge was built, it must have been at least about 1 meter above the then water level. That is, when the bridge was built, the sea must have been 3 meters or 9 feet below the present-day sea level. As per the World Oceanography Report, a 9 feet rise in sea levels due to the melting of the polar ice caps and global warming should have occurred over 7,000 years. This helps us to date the bridge construction to about 7,000 years ago, or 5000 BCE, using oceanography as a dating tool.
It is a fit case to be called a civil engineering marvel of an ancient civilization.
Now, I admittedly have not had a chance to personally examine Adam's Bridge, but I find the geographic location and the descriptive correlation to the ancient texts very interesting. I also find the claims that this site has been debunked, meaning it is simply a natural coral formation, to be premature. Not to mention the dismissive attitude from academia and the media, which became evident when trying to find a single national news report to include in this presentation, but couldn't. As anthropologists, we should not be so arrogant, lest we forget what our branch of the sciences had proposed for nearly the entirety of the first half of the 20th century.
The skull of Piltdown Man, once believed to be proof of an evolutionary missing link, has long been proven fake. But the culprit behind the debunked fossil has remained unclear for more than six decades, until now. A new report in the journal Royal Society Open Science suggests Charles Dawson, the man who claimed in 1912 to have discovered the Piltdown skull, was responsible. Back in 1953, researchers at Oxford and the British Natural History Museum determined the skull was compiled from human and orangutan bones stained with chemicals to appear thousands of years old.
It is staggering to think that for close to half a century, the British Museum featured a fake missing link included in all of the textbooks and curriculums, from the United States to every colony of the UK. Of course, this sloppy archaeology was not a one-time event. For example, Nebraska Man, another alleged ancestor, which hit the papers with beautiful illustrations of Nebraska Man in his habitat, all sold to the public based on the discovery of a single tooth, which embarrassingly turned out to be not from a human ancestor, but from a pig. To be fair, there was one major world power of the time that, from the highest levels of its government, did not subscribe to the Piltdown Man or the theory it was based on, and that would be the Nazi regime of the 30s and 40s. Now, this may be new for some, but the Nazi Annenurbe was a state-funded anthropology department which Hitler used for political and propaganda purposes at the time, but have nevertheless been continually vindicated, academically speaking, since the end of World War II, at which time all but one member was released, as these were mainly professors that had not committed any war crimes. And except for one that was executed, all the rest went on to teach in their fields of studies at universities all around the world honorably.
An ancient occult legend that tells the story of a continent somewhere in the North Atlantic. There lived a race of super beings who had fallen from grace through evil and vice. The land was called Atlantis. A great flood wiped these beings off the face of the earth. But before they could all be destroyed, certain priests escaped by boat. These escaped priests, believed by mystics to be the original race of Aryan godmen, who were said to be the ancestors of all Indian and European people, descended from the super beings of Atlantis, and that they had lost their powers by mating with mere mortals. The Nordic race did not evolve, but came directly down from heaven to settle on the Atlantic continent. Ancient immigrants from Atlantis had founded a great civilization
in the high Himalayas. Here, survivors of the last cosmic catastrophe took shelter. This is the true cradle of the Aryan race.
There was a sudden infusion on the Y side of Europe, meaning Y chromosome, or the paternal male lineage, of what was famously first recognized as Cro-Magnon types, but the current politically correct term is European early modern humans. So DNA testing on a roughly 30,000-year-old specimen from the Baglisi Cave in Italy compared to modern sequence genomes has shown that certain modern European populations, often with Rh negative blood and recessive traits, are almost identical to Cro-Magnon. The DNA sequence has remained static, that is to say, unchanged, in over 28,000 years, indicating that Europe was first populated during the late Pleistocene by a fully modern individual, not just anatomically correct, which is the term you give to someone between, let's say, 35,000 and 200,000 years ago, but fully modern, which does not happen until 35,000 years ago in an anthropology classroom. In other words, their modern DNA is unchanged since that time. So when did these Europeans do all that supposed evolving? Of course, it is now clear that humanity is in fact a hybrid species with mixed ancestry, including contributions from Neanderthal, a species named Denisovans, and some species which we have not yet found any fossils for, but have detected in the DNA of some modern races, but not in other races. So it has been said that history is written by the winners, and unfortunately, this includes what is taught as anthropology. But we're starting to discover that our true history may more closely resemble the ancient mythologies from many of our ancestors than the modern fairy tales from our controlled media, centrally funded schools, and corrupt politicians who publicly hail science and privately hail Satan.
We begin today with what's perhaps one of the most secretive meetings of the world's most powerful people. The Bohemian Grove Retreat is held every summer in Monterey, California. Top government and business leaders are among those that attend the men's only event. It's been going on for decades, but what actually happens there remains a mystery. And that's because the two-week gathering is completely closed to the media. But now an infamous hacker is trying to shed some light on what goes on there. The hacker, Guccifer, has handed over some emails to RT. Here's one of them. It says, quote, it shows News Corp executive Andrew Knight allegedly writing to former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell. And he urges Powell to make sure that the U.K. Prime Minister Tony Blair comes to the Bohemian Grove. And he says the event should be, quote, a top priority for him.
There's been a lot of speculation about what actually goes on there. Some people say druid worship goes on there because there's a lot of worshiping of the redwood trees. There's a giant ceremony with like a 40-foot owl. Right. there have been photographers who've gotten inside, and it just seems like very bizarre rituals happening by people who have enormous influence in the world. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that they gather to do this every year is sort of a little bit unsettling for people.
Speaking of these people that do have enormous influence, who do we know about who's on the guest list?
Nixon went, Reagan went, Hoover went. Bill Clinton has famously made fun of it, as saying that it was naked Republicans rubbing themselves against redwood trees. But Nixon definitely, on the Watergate tapes, he actually is heard sort of making fun of it and saying that it's a gay event. But we also know that major CEOs, basically anyone who's influential in America and around the world, has come to this event, or been invited.
It seems like all the world's most rich and powerful, the policymakers, the influence makers are there. Yeah, you don't really hear too much about it.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an author and anthropologist, and would like to invite you to join me in awakening from a long amnesia.
Species with amnesia, our forgotten history. Gods with amnesia, subterranean worlds of inner earth. The occult secrets of Vril. And 1666, redemption through sin.
I would like to thank my subscribers who share my posts, as I rely on word of mouth, and I appreciate all of the positive feedback, reviews on my books, and I thank you very much for listening.